This podcast of the Swain Event is brought to you by InsureFit RM. For all of your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs, call InsureFit RM at 865-684-4900.
Touchdown or Turnover is backed by Alcorton Federal Credit Union, a place where you belong.
Touchdown, a turnover, backed by Alcoa 10, Federal Credit Union, a place where you belong, better rates and better service, 850 AM, 100.9 FM, Rocky Top Sports, Ben McKee, Charlie Burge, Jason Swain here. You can listen to us on your free Swain Event app, right there on the dial, 850 AM, 100.9 FM, SwainEvent.com, or Swain Event TV. Stream us on Periscope and Facebook Live, and watch us here in the Low T Center studio. All right, today's touchdown turnover is about 7-on-7. That seems to be very popular. This is not new. It's been growing and growing each and every year. But this year, it is really, really taking over the offseason for football players across the country. Touchdown turnover, that 7-on-7 is bad for football. Now, when I say 7-on-7, I'm not just talking about doing it in practice or, you know, at the high school level, at the college level. I mean the summer 7-on-7, the 7-on-7 teams that get together and it's ran similarly to AAU basketball. So summer 7-on-7, touchdown turnover is bad for college football.
I say turnover that it is bad for football, but I do kind of lean towards this maybe down the middle, depending on maybe the high school that you're at, because I don't know if y'all saw it, but over the weekend, Barton Simmons posted a video of a DB and a receiver going at it, and the DB just clocked the receiver, knocked his little helmet thingy off that he was wearing. That's not good for football at all. That's not teaching that defensive back how to play defensive back, in my opinion. At the college level, it is absolutely good for football because the team can come together and offense can come together, really get those valuable reps. And that I feel the same way about that in high school. It's probably more important in high school because these guys are so young. They're learning a playbook, trying to execute, trying to learn proper technique and things like that, get on, have a good connection in terms of quarterback to receiver, tight ends, things like that. So I do say that it is good for football, but I absolutely hate when you see the videos of DBs clocking receivers at the line on in 7-on-7. That is not good for football. I in my opinion, that's bad sportsmanship and not teaching the right way to play.
Yeah, summer 7-on-7, travel 7-on-7, and that's what we're talking about here. The travel 7-on-7. The Summer League 7-on-7, you got players going across the country on teams. Is that bad for college football?
And we're talking about, like, I'm looking at something about the Adidas 7-on-7 National Championship, which is, you know, high schoolers, and they work out in front of coaches in doing this. It's essentially another recruiting tool, more or less, is really what it turned into. Like you said, you equated it to AAU. I would say, I don't know that it's bad, but I don't see a ton of benefits in it. You said it was bad for college football. I'll say turnover. I don't know that it's actively bad. It has the potential for some kind of nonsense as far as recruiting goes. And some people think that's bad. Some people don't mind it. But I'll say I don't know if it's actively bad, but I don't think that it's necessarily good. I mean, Ben's touching on it, you know, putting kids at risk in some sense. But just in general, it seems like, especially when it's facilitated like this with a big brand putting it on and it's kind of a bigger event, I don't know. I don't see kind of no harm, no foul, but is it helping a lot of people? I don't know about that.
Let me go to the phones first, and then I'll come back, and I'll kind of touch on this.
Yeah, I'm interested to know what you think of
on this topic. Let's get to Rod in Kentucky. Rod, good morning.
How you doing?
I'm great, man. How are you doing?
Man, I can't explain. I heard you guys talking about soccer in the last segment, and I figured I'd share this little soccer story with you. Man, I almost had an African guy try to fight me over soccer one time.
please share.
So we were at work, and he's like, "Hey, Rob, what are you doing over the weekend?" I was like, "Man, probably going to hang out with my family." He goes, "You going to watch the World Cup?" I go, "Man, I don't watch that garbage." Like, this dude, like, instantly got mad. He's like, What you call garbage? I was like, "Look, man, it's boring for the exact same reasons you guys said. Like, I don't like games ending in ties. I don't like this 1-1 nonsense. Like, man, I like action." And he proceeded to tell me how soccer is the greatest thing ever and the greatest athletes in the world play soccer. I said, "Look, man, I'm with you on how popular soccer is." I said, "But man, you better be lucky that here in America, we don't have our best athletes growing up playing soccer." I said, "Man, I want you to think about something, man. If we had Kobe, if we had LeBron, if we had Odell Beckham Jr. playing soccer, dude, soccer matches would be like 75-0. I was like, "Man, we would absolutely destroy y'all. We, like, the rest of the world would quit playing soccer if the best athletes in America played soccer." I mean, man, this dude was mad for about a week. Every time I walked to the car, I was looking around for this dude because he was so angry. He was so mean mugging me every time I saw him.
He was afraid he was going to sneak you.
Oh, man. But, man, apparently around the rest of the world, especially in Africa and Hispanic countries, they take soccer pretty serious.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is, you better be glad we didn't have Jason Swain get recruited to play soccer when he was younger. And you know, some of these dudes that are actually killing it in sports where you have to be extremely athletic, because, man, they tap out soccer, man.
It's weird, man, because soccer is like that sport that you don't need a lot to play growing up. All you need is a ball. You get out there, you can just improve just in the backyard. Whereas baseball, you got to have equipment, you got to have all this stuff, and that's why, you know, baseball is not popular in a lot of urban areas in the United States. Basketball, all you need is a milk carton, because I know I had one of those when I lived up in Chicago. All I needed was a milk carton attached to a light pole, and it was on. We was playing some ball. But, you know, you go to a playground, you know, really easy playing basketball growing up. All you need is a basketball. Soccer, I got a lot of respect for soccer because, you know, it is the best athletes. To be able to run for that amount of time and to not touch the ball with your hands, and you're dribbling with your feet, and you're headbutting it and doing all those things. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it's an amazing sport. I just don't find it interesting.
I mean, I feel you on all the endurance that it has taken for Swain. If we had LeBron, yeah, Odell Beckham Jr., these dudes playing soccer matches would be 75-0.
I agree with you. Oh, I agree. I agree with you.
You have a great day.
Hey, thank you. Travel 707, there's so many different layers to this. It's popular. It's very popular in college football.
Very.
It's hard to have a hot take when it comes to Travel 707 because there's so many benefits to 707. There's also a lot of things that, as a football purist, I would be very skeptical of. I would be very worried about. When you watch some of these videos, you see receivers pressing up a receiver. I mean, you see DBs pressing up a receiver. They are lining up offsides. At the snap of the football, they're slapping the receiver upside the head. You're getting fights that kind of start there. It could be dangerous. Now, years ago, you didn't have any type of headwear. You didn't have that self-protective helmet that a lot of teams wear now. And so you have people running to each other across the middle with no protection. That's very, very scary. And I'm going just to mention some of the negatives of 707, the travel 707 first, and then I'll highlight the positives. So the negatives is you have coaches, 707 coaches, who don't even coach football sometimes, who have no idea about the importance of technique at the corner position. They have no idea about technique at the wide receiver position. They just want to coach ball. That's all they want to do. And so a lot of times, these DBs, they don't get proper teaching from a DB coach. So they're always pressing. They never understand how to play with their feet. They're always holding, always grabbing, and it's not realistic at all. For the receivers, it's not realistic for you to be catching a ball and making 78 moves. You got to catch and get upfield. But the competition is good, and you need that. Another negative is that the way AAU basketball got a black eye was that you had AAU coaches and you had these guys being the middleman between shoe companies and schools and things like that, to a point where we just had the FBI start arresting assistant basketball coaches, and now they are in trouble and they could do some jail time. The difference between 707 football and AAU basketball is you don't have a shoe company involved. You may have a 707 coach or a parent or a high school coach may be involved or engaged in some illegal activity as far as the NCAA is concerned, but it would never get to that point.
Yeah, just with football compared to basketball, it's two totally different things, specifically because you can leave basketball after 1 year. So yes, a shoe company would come to a kid, be like, hey, we're going to give you this amount of money right now so that we can have you next year when you're done with college basketball and you're going into the pros. Now, in football, generally speaking, players have to stay through 3 years, right?
You have to be out of high school 3 years.
Yes, so generally speaking, it would not work the same. I would not count it out as a possibility of these shoe companies pulling some nonsense.
No, I ain't doing that.
But the likelihood of it is far, far less.
They're not doing that.
They are involved in this, but are they doing the same thing as college basketball? Yeah. I highly doubt it.
You have Adidas getting involved and sponsoring 707 teams. Under Armour,
all the major guys do it.
Yeah, Under Armour. I mean, they're getting sponsorships. The team is, but you're not putting a deal in place where you're going to pay this high school quarterback $50,000, $100,000,
yeah,
knowing that in 3 years he's going to be a high draft pick and he's going to sign with you. That's too much of a risk if you're a shoe company. It's really pointless to do that.
Speaking of shoe companies, how about Marvin Bagley signing with Puma? And not only Marvin Bagley, but Zaire Smith from Texas Tech signing with Puma as well.
I like it. Didn't CP sign with Puma coming out?
CP as in Chris Paul?
No, as in Cordell Patterson.
Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah, had the very colorful kicks. Hey, if they are open to paying you a lot of money, then do it. As long as the shoe is comfortable, man.
Also, looking for a little bit of a brand pivot. It's interesting.
The NBA draft is Thursday, and as we know, my Memphis Grizzlies tend to blow this up which way. Can we have a daily prayer that we say for the next 3-4 days?
Just our Father.
I think we need to have like we need to spend hour three of every show praying that the Memphis Grizzlies don't mess it up once again.
Please guide the front office in Memphis.
Travel 7.
If it be your will.
Travel 707, man. It is dominating college football. There's several college football coaches that want no part of it. The David Shaws, they want no part of it. They don't care about 707. That's not how they evaluate. Well, you have some other coaches that they put some weight in Travel 707. Not all of it, but there are some players who have gotten offers from their performance in a 707 event. Very interesting conversation, interesting dynamic that's taking place in college football right now, affecting recruiting each and every day. Swain Event, fueled by Dead End Barbecue. Stay with us. At some point in your life, you're going to need an attorney. You need a guy like Jerry Castile with the law firm of Butler, Vines, and Babb. Jerry Castile is East Tennessee born, and he understands what giving his all truly means. To Jared, every case is big and every client is important. He will aggressively push your case to make sure you are quickly paid every dollar that you deserve. Give Jared Castile a call, 865-244-3933, and talk with him directly. His office is located at 2701 Kingston Pike. So if you've been injured in a car wreck, let Jared Castile and Butler, Vines, and Babb fight for you.
Top 100 barbecue restaurant Dead End Barbecue isn't just a great place to go for dinner. They have fantastic lunch specials every day. Monday through Friday, they offer great deals on different meals each day. Dead End Barbecue has the Smoke and Sweet meal with half-smoked chicken, a side, choice of bread and banana pudding on Monday, brisket French dip on Tuesday, salmon salad on Wednesday, Thursday is the cold smoked turkey BLT, and center cut bone-in pork chop on Friday. Not to mention, you can get a bowl of beans and smoked sausage for $6 every day. So when you are looking for somewhere to go for lunch during the week, look no further than Top 100 Barbecue Restaurant Dead End Barbecue. Check them out online at deadendbbq.com. Dead End Barbecue, your lunch search is over.
You're driving home, flashing blue lights in your rearview mirror. The next thing you know, you're being arrested for DUI. Be responsible, but remember, just because you're arrested doesn't mean you're guilty. Call DUI and criminal defense attorney Marcos Garza. Put this number in your phone right now, 865-540-8300, because you never know when you or a friend will need it. Don't say guilty, say Garza. 865-540-8300 and GarzaLaw.com.
We have all made the mistake of dropping or breaking our smartphones. See? But did you know that you can have it repaired for a fraction of the cost that it takes to replace it? Well, you can, because iDrop is the area's leading mobile repair store, home of the 1 hour or less phone repair, 1 year parts warranty, and number one customer service. Broken screens, cracked cameras, charging ports, batteries, you break it, we'll fix it. If you didn't break your phone, protect it with one of our leading accessories such as LifeProof, OtterBox, UAG, Insipico, Caseology, and Spec. Visit our West Hills location at 7115 Kingston Pike between Office Depot and Hardee's, or call 865-888-9740 and speak with our trained technicians to see how we can get your phone working today.
Insurance.
Nobody likes surprises, so switch to Erie Rate Lock. Get a great rate that stays that way, even after an accident, ticket, or inflation. In fact, it's locked until you change a car, driver, or your address.
Your Erie agent in Knoxville is InsureFit RM. Get a quote at 865-684-4900. That's 865-684-4900.
Erie Rate Lock does not guarantee continued insurance coverage and is not available in all states.
Looking for a different way to enjoy the Swain Event? Then check out Swain Event TV, brought to you by Toyota Knoxville. Follow the show on Periscope and Facebook Live.
I do think 707 is very, very beneficial. There's a lot of players that have gotten attention from what they've done at camps, what they've done at events where they are lined up against, you know, one of the best DBs in the country. They beat them all day long. I'm sorry, there's value in that. There's a ton of value in that. I know for David Shaw, he does not care about 707, but I'm sorry, here in the SEC country, 707 is very important because you want to see how guys compete. when you are recruiting in this conference, you're recruiting the best players in the country. And you want to know, okay, does this player fold during the highest level of competition, or do they rise? Do their game go to the next level? Now, I know great SEC players who have now become coaches. Jacquez Green, Florida legend, he was actually one of the reasons why I wanted to go play at Florida when I was younger, because of the way they threw the ball across the yard and their success the receivers were having. But Jacquez is a high school football coach. He's not a big fan of how 7-on-7 is played because, like I mentioned in the last segment, you lose all fundamentals. There's no way that you see DBs playing press up with their offsides in the game. Number one, you're going to get a penalty. Number two, you're going to get beat if you play press up all game long like that and you're that close. Mm-hmm. It's just not realistic. And so for the football peers, I can see how they can get they cannot like how 7-on-7 is played now. 7-on-7 is so, like, crazy that you have rapper Plies commenting on 7-on-7 and giving valuable advice. Like, Plies could be a freaking football coach. I mean, he was dropping straight
knowledge.
About 7-on-7 and how these kids should approach recruiting. But it is important. I remember the NCAA passed a rule years ago that did not allow 7-on-7 on campuses at all, college campuses, and now they've changed the rules a little bit to where we see 7-on-7 here at college campuses. But it's a hot topic for coaches.
I'm looking at an article that I believe appeared first in the Washington Post. This says where essentially there's a big group of high school coaches that want 7-on-7 mm-hmm. banned. They cite a few different things. They don't like the involvement of the shoe companies and things like that. And they said it really engenders a me first culture. And there's a lot of problems as far as that goes. These guys kind of go and they start feeling themselves, in these, instead of caring about their teammates that they play with at their high school. They go here and they show off and they do all the stuff, and it kind of creates a bad attitude in them, according to these high school coaches, among other reasons why they want to go on. Those were some of the big ones that they cited, though.
Here's my thing with that high school coach or these high school coaches that feel that way. If you are not helping your players get recruited, what are they supposed to do? So we have a lot of high school coaches out here that, because they're making only $30,000 or $35,000 or $40,000, they feel like it is not their responsibility to help their kid be recruited. So now you have the parent stepping in and taking these kids on recruiting trips. You have the parents that are signing their kids up for, you know, these rival showcase camps and these 7-on-7 camps, because high school coach, you're not doing what you need to be doing. I was lucky. I had a high school coach that – took a vested interest in my success past high school. There's high school coaches that refuse to help their kids be recruited because they're only thinking about themselves. They're only thinking about their high school team. And I agree, the summer is very important for high school coaches because you want to be working out with your team. High school football starts earlier than college football. So we're starting to play football games in early August sometimes.
My cousin who plays at Henry County High School there in Paris, Tennessee, his first game is, told me yesterday, August 15th.
Yes, I mean, it's early.
And they start school August 1st.
So I get it. Like, you want your best player. You want them with your team working on your plays and things like that because of the season that's coming up. But at the same time, you have a young man that has an opportunity to get his college paid for if he goes out here and get a scholarship, and you're not helping them. So I want to know about the high school coach that doesn't like 7-on-7. Are you helping your kids? Because I know several cases where I've had to put in work to help a kid get a scholarship more than a high school coach. And it never should be like that. Never should be like that. Why wouldn't you want former players of your high school to go and play ball at the next level? It only looks better for you. Just like college coaches, why would you want one of your players being drafted high in the NFL? Which I never understood why sometimes college coaches would dog out their players to NFL scouts on purpose. There's a difference between telling the truth and trying to negatively impact a young man's money because of a grudge you may hold or something else. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. So I wonder, I wonder what's like how that high school coach is feeling. I wonder why. But 7-on-7, I'm telling you, it is a polarizing topic. I mean, it really is. There's some high school coaches that love it. There's some that hate it. But I want to know the reasons why they hate it. I want to know the motives.
That video that Barton Simmons posted over the weekend is why I would hate it if I did fully hate it. Like I said earlier, I kind of lean towards it being more beneficial than it being a negative thing to do. That video is why I would, if I was leaning towards not doing it, that's why I would do it, not do it, because that's not teaching football. That's not football. And I guarantee you that he picked that up from somewhere. It's not something that he just does. Exactly. They think it's funny. They think it's cute. They think it's something that's smart that they can get away with. And it's not. And I thought the receiver, I can't remember his name. I know his last name was Wright. He handled it perfectly. He just went out and balled. Barton continued to post several videos of him going out and mossing that defensive back and catching several passes. So I thought the wide receiver handled it as best you could in that situation. Because I know if I was in that situation, it would be hard for me not to swing back on you.
I'm with you. So you have 7-on-7. Another topic in college football that I want to get your take on, I want to get to the text box, I want to get the phone calls, Facebook Live comments, is how do you feel about eighth graders getting college scholarships, getting offers? 2022 quarterback Ty Simpson was offered by Tennessee not too long ago. He's from right here in Tennessee. Goes to Westview in Martin, Tennessee. He has not taken a high school snap, but he has an offer already from Kentucky, LSU, Michigan, Mississippi State, and Tennessee. He has a 247 profile, and he's not even in high school yet. 6'1", 170 pounds, class of 2022. How do you feel about eighth graders getting college offers? Again, 865-255-03. Swain Event, fueled by Dead End Barbecue.
Craving homemade flavors that don't take hours in the kitchen? Mrs. Grissom's cheese spreads and chicken salads are the perfect go-to. Ready-to-eat meals and snacks found in the meat or dairy section at the grocery store, with flavors of home in every bite. Whether you crave the classic Mrs. Grissom's pimento cheese or the gold gluten-free select cranberry pecan chicken salad, enjoy the sweet taste of a home-cooked meal in every container. Select the best. Select Mrs. Grissom's. Small town, like a small town.
You don't have to take an L just because you can't listen to the Swain Event live. You can catch up on the podcast posted daily on the app, online, and on iTunes.
Ty Simpson, middle schooler, preparing to go to high school. He's going to camps, and he's picking up college offers before he ever takes a snap at the high school level. He's already getting offers. If you are a Swain Event Plus member, first of all, thank you. Second, the cups are packed up, ready to be shipped today. Third, you probably have heard of the Jonathan Crompton interview, where Crompton wasn't an eighth grade quarterback being offered, but he was like a ninth grader. He was one of those Jimmy Clausen, LeBron James type of high school athletes that people thought he was the next great one. And they characterize that high school player that at a very, very early age. They basically crowned him early. And Taj Simpson falls into that category. Getting an offer from major D1 schools as an eighth grader. Now, this was the topic on the program back when Stokes was a part of the show on air years ago when Tennessee was doing some of the same things. And people had their opinions about eighth graders getting scholarships. They highlighted why it's bad. People, other folks highlighted why it could be good. What is your take? 865-255-03. How do you feel about eighth graders getting D1 offers? Good, bad, indifferent?
I think at the end of the day, it's not necessarily that harmful, but I don't like it because the recruiting process is just so messy. I mean, I've talked at length about the problems that I have with recruiting, and there are many, and just how it goes. And specifically, and I don't know about this kid in particular, Ty Simpson, and how he takes it. It's case by case, but you see so often that the recruiting process gives these kids just a real superiority complex and a real just kind of, big head, start thinking about themselves probably more than they are. And I hate that element of it. And you're talking, I mean, in the eighth grade. Eighth grade, how old is it? 13? Like, how impressionable is that dude?
I was 12, 13 years old.
Yeah. Just think about how formative those years are. And this kid has colleges coming to him and just raining praise. Oh, you're so great. Oh, look at you here. Come, please, come play for us in 5 years. And like I said, at the end of the day, it's case by case. And it, I think, largely is not really all that harmful, but I don't like it. It's just something. You're recruiting kid to college. Let's make this a thing that happens when they're closer to going to college. Maybe keep an eye on them, but don't have contact with them until a certain age. I would say I wouldn't mind if sanctions like that came down from the NCAA that said you can't.
You're not contacting them. He's coming to camp.
So, well, sure. Whatever it is.
Yeah, when he comes,
maybe offer. You can't offer them. Or
when that player comes to your camp and he camps there, he shows off. You can offer him a scholarship because he's on your campus now.
Yeah.
I saw a tweet from a college coach that said, "I can't respond to you. I'm not ignoring you. I just can't respond to you because you're too young." So, mm-hmm. I guess that is saying that college coaches can't recruit you, call you, you can't respond back over the phone or text messages or whatever until they get a certain age. But if you have a young man camps at your university or comes to your football camp and you think that in 3 or 4 years he's going to be one of the top players in the country, I guess these colleges feel like, why not? Let me go ahead and offer him. So, Charlie Hurt.
And that's what they, at this point, that's what they should do, because you're going to have other programs horning in on this kid for, you know, to recruit him. And so these schools like Tennessee, they look at this guy, they say that he's really, really good, and they see that Kentucky, Mississippi State, everyone has offered him already, and they say, all right, we got to jump on this. We got to make sure we're in on the train already.
My thing is, can you tell that in 7th and 8th grade that, okay, that's a D1 football player?
Yeah.
To what extent, though? Because I have a good example. Will Ignat and I went to high school. Well, I don't know that we technically went to high school together. I was a senior. He was a freshman. I was a lot older than he was. But I remember my junior year of high school, he was an eighth grade football player that was, like, he was well known. And he played running back. And at the time, people were like, oh, yeah, Will's going to be really good at the high school level, really good running back. And then he progresses over the course of his high school career and ends up being a linebacker at the University of Tennessee in the SEC. If you would have told me that when he was in eighth grade, I would not have believed you. So, and I think and then on the other note, I kind of lean more towards where Charlie was going, is you have no idea what those kids are going to be in 4 years whatsoever. I mean, they're so young, and I'm not
half the person I was when I was in eighth grade. And a lot of these kids don't have the best guidance around them. So I'm not saying all of them do, but there are some that maybe lets that get to their head and maybe doesn't work as hard from that standpoint going on.
Yeah, you're just so impressionable at that age, man.
And I do wonder how much size has to do with it, because you had Alabama offering Keonta Goodwin, a 6'7", 370-pound eighth grader from Louisville yesterday. Like, how much of that is
what
talent? How much of that is he's one massive human being? He could potentially be a great football player in a couple of years. Let's offer him.
I think every young man is different. You know, with Will Ignat, you saw that he was athletic, and you figure he had a chance, but you didn't. You didn't know. I remember when Reggie Ragland was growing up, and there was not a doubt in anyone's mind around Huntsville, Alabama, that Reggie Ragland was going to be a D1 player, basketball or football. If Reggie Ragland continued to grow, he was probably going to be a power forward basketball, something like that. But he stopped growing, so he was like 6'2 and a half, somewhere along those lines, 6'3, whatever. And he focused on football. There was not a doubt with his athleticism, his speed, his size, that he was going to play D1 football. I can use myself for an example. I remember my middle school coach was like, yeah, you're going to play college football. I mean, or college basketball at a young age, because the gap between me and everyone else was just so wide. If I continued to get better and better and better, there was no doubt I was going to be a D1 player. I don't think every kid deserves an offer at 8th grade or 9th grade or even 10th grade. Some kids develop late. But when you take a kid like Ty Simpson, and he is 6'1", he's 200 pounds, whatever, 170, and his mechanics are flawless. He has a big arm. Yep. He's going to grow. And so you just kind of know, if he continues to work, he's going to be probably the best quarterback in America. You don't think that people saw that in Trevor Lawrence, when Trevor Lawrence was in 9th grade, 10th grade, that, okay, he has a skill and a talent that not many people his age have. And if he continues to work, he's going to be one of the best quarterbacks ever. I heard this between both of you guys about getting the big head and not working hard. And I remember when I got my offer in my 8th grade summer going to my 9th grade year, and then my 9th grade summer going to my sophomore year, I started getting a lot more offers. My first SEC offer came from like Vanderbilt. It was my 8th grade summer going to my 9th grade year, only because they thought I was older, and they thought I just was dropped on planet Earth from like somewhere else. Why didn't we know about this kid? Well, that's because I'm in 8th grade, going to my 9th grade year. So what they did, honestly, was it opened my eyes up even more. It made me want to work harder. It said, okay, you have a talent. You can do this if you accomplish it. Someone else sees a talent in you. You didn't even know you had this talent. It took someone else to tell you that you have this talent. So now I started working even harder. My vision was clear. What's important here, and you guys mentioned this, is you got to have the right people around you. Because you have not arrived yet. T. Hodge, running back at Maryville, gets an offer as a sophomore, going to his junior year. He has not arrived yet. What they've done is said, okay, you are better than most kids your age. And we think by the time you are a senior, you're going to be one of the best players in the country. So we want to let you know that we believe in you early, and we think you can be a player for us early. And so you're trying to just be first. What's important, and T. Hodge is going to have this. Again, running back from Maryville, got an offer over the weekend. T. Hodge is going to have this. T. Hodge has people around him that's going to make sure that he's grounded. His uncle is Randall Cobb. There's no way that T. Hodge is going to lose sight of what's important. That is getting better each and every day. That is remaining humble each and every day. He's going to have that. The problem is not everyone has the resources that a T. Hodge will be accessible to. When sometimes you get a scholarship offer early, you think you have arrived. You think you don't have to work as hard anymore. And yeah, that does happen. But you got to have a really good high school coach. You got to have some good people around them, whether it's a parent or grandparent or somebody, a family friend. You got to have people around these young men who are getting offers early, who are being followed and chased by college schools. You got to make sure that they remain humble. That's hard to do. It's hard to do for a grown man sometimes who gets a promotion at his job, and now he's has more power. He has more money. Man, grown men change. They don't know how to handle power. They don't know how to handle fame and maybe more authority. So take a young man who's still hitting puberty, still maturing. They're going to have some of the same issues. There's no doubt about it, but you got to have the right people around you. I don't have a problem that much with these young kids getting offered. I really don't. If you feel like that this player is special. I've been around the country seeing young athletes, and there's been several eighth graders that was like, this dude is different.
Yes. I mean,
this kid is different.
Yeah, and there you definitely have those Reggie Raglins where you're like, yeah, he's a D1 football player, D1 basketball player, and you spoke to Reggie Raglin. I remember him tearing up Huntsville on the basketball circuit, and if he was taller, he'd probably be in the NBA right now.
Easy.
He's a freak athlete.
Yeah.
But then you also have your David Sills, wide receiver for West Virginia, who committed to USC as a quarterback when he was like 13 years old. Mm-hmm. And that's where that was kind of my point of where you have no idea how these kids are going to progress and where they're going to be 4 or 5 years from the time that they commit. So he commits as a quarterback to USC when he's 13 years old, and then he ends up a wide receiver at West Virginia. He had to go to JUCO along that route to kind of switch positions. So you just have no idea.
Well, what happened? I mean, why is it bad that he switched to wide receiver?
Nothing's bad. It's just a point that you have no idea what these kids are going to do, what they're going to be. I'm sure when he was 13 years old, everybody around him and everybody kind of in that California area where he's from was like, oh, David Sills, he's the next Peyton Manning, the next Drew Brees, the next Phillip Rivers. But then he turns out to be a All-American receiver at West Virginia, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying you have no idea what route these guys are going to take to get to where they end up.
No, you don't know. USC should have probably got him as a wide receiver.
Yeah, correct.
I mean, what you're doing is saying, okay, this eighth grader is better than every other eighth grader we've seen in the country, and we just want to be first to recognizing that we see something in you. And I'll make the argument that an offer at that age – could actually help a young man be focused.
Yeah.
To be even more focused, to have that clear vision.
Because, has a goal.
Yeah, because I didn't know when I was that age that I had this super talent and I was more athletic than everyone. I had a chance to play at the next level and possibly play on Sundays. I had no clue. It took other people to tell me. And then once I got that confirmation or that validation from the Tennessees and the Vanderbilts and the schools, you know, around Huntsville that said, okay, this kid in 3 years, he may be the best receiver in the country. It was their confidence in me is what they saw that made me go, okay, I have a plan. Now I have a goal because I can do this. They told me as long as I work hard, stay out of trouble, make sure my grades are okay. So from that point on, man, you know what you want to do. You have a goal. How many kids at that age have no clue what they want to do when they grow up? They don't have a 4-year plan. They don't have a 5-year plan. They don't know where they want to go to school.
I didn't know what I wanted to do until I was a junior in college.
Yeah. So I can make the argument that it's actually good.
Yeah.
It can be good.
I'm not against it. I'm just not the biggest fan. Because even like David Sills, like, yeah, he ended up a receiver, but he signed with West Virginia initially as a quarterback, then went to JUCO, switched positions, and then came back. He was Sports Illustrated said he was the greatest prospect ever at quarterback, the best arm money can buy, things like that. And then he gets to the college level, and it turns out, well,
still a great athlete.
Still a great athlete, but he's not the best money arm can buy or the best arm money can buy, and he's not the greatest prospect of all time at quarterback.
Well, I mean, I want to know why he didn't make it a quarterback, because you can still have a good arm.
I can tell you why. He grew up in Delaware.
Well, there it is.
I just, at the end of the day, like I said, it's probably not all that harmful. But if it went away, if there was something the NCAA did that, you know, outlawed it or whatever, I wouldn't have a problem.
But see, even if they did outlaw it,
it would still happen. It would just happen the table.
Because, yeah, you're going to have coaches playing the game no matter what. They'll circumvent the rules in every way that they have to get these guys, and it is what it is. But I just don't have a big problem with it, but I don't love it.
It's one of those things that is really a waste of the NCAA's time. Yeah, to spin on it and try to, like, fix something that's not broken. It's not a problem. Like, there's not kids who are getting in trouble because they're getting offers early. It's not an issue. So, there's really no reason to put any attention on it to change it because it doesn't happen a lot, honestly. And when it does, it's a kid who's just a freak. And why not get that early attention? Why not have people around you who now hold you accountable? I remember growing up, and I had guys that engaged in gang activity. I had guys that sold drugs, and they would not allow me to be around them when they were doing those things because they knew I had a future. They were like, it was like the neighborhood was kind of taking care of me. It's like, no, you stay home, or no, you don't get involved in this because you can't mess up your opportunities. I think the earlier we identify that a young man can do something with his life, I think the better. Because now the whole community is making sure they do everything they can to help the young man be successful. So, I mean, I think it's a couple ways you can look at it. You can go, oh, man, the kid may have a big head. Who cares? As long as at the end of the day he's still – a good kid and he's working hard. There's nothing wrong with a little swag. There's nothing wrong with filling yourself a little bit because you got to have confidence in this world to be successful.
Well, when you think about it, you know, I make that argument that those years when you're 10 to 15 right in there are incredibly formative. But at the same time, you can have those same exact problems with a kid that's 17, 18, 19, 20. You know, some dudes just don't mature quickly, or sometimes don't mature at all, and can just really, really be affected by that and come in with a bad attitude, no work ethic, you know, whatever the problems may be that crop up from having that happen. Sometimes it can happen at almost any age. And so
one thing I think it does do is I think it puts unnecessary pressure on the kid as well. A kid 12, 13, 14 years old should not have the pressure of, okay, I received a scholarship from the University of Alabama, the University of Tennessee at 13 years old when I was an eighth grader going into my ninth grade season. That type of pressure should not be placed on a 13-year-old kid at all, because then he's expected to be a top 50 player in the country by the time he's a senior, more than likely.
I mean, for you play quarterback.
No, I mean, I get why it happens. Yeah. I'm just not a fan of it happening because, as Charlie just said, those when you're 10 to 15 years old, those years are so important, kind of how you're developing as a person and your traits and characteristics
I remember how pliable I was at that age and in terms of taking things in and wanting looking at other people and saying, oh, I want to be like that, and I would, like, change things in my life because I wasn't mature enough in my own person to be set in my ways to believe myself and say this is who I am like I am now. And I think that can be harmful. But
a young man who gets, you know, recruited very early, by the time that he's a junior or senior and he's really going to make a decision – he's already probably exhausted from the recruitment, and he handles his recruitment probably a little bit more mature than a guy like a Jordan Young who gets love early. He commits on the spot emotionally to Tennessee, and then it takes nothing for him to flip to Florida State because he didn't experience big time recruitment until later in his senior year. So he looks like he can't handle the process. Now, at the end of the day, he is at Florida State. He is getting a college scholarship, so it all works out for him. But you take a kid who – you take me, for example. I thought I handled the recruiting process very maturely. I didn't have really any help except for my high school football coach. I committed. I stuck with my commitment, and boom, I came to Tennessee. But you take these kids who get love late, and they don't know how to handle the fame.
Yeah.
They think it's a game, and they flip-flopping, and they you know, doing whatever they can for attention, and it gets out of control for them. But you take a kid who's got that attention early, he's I think he's more you know, experienced with handling the recruitment process. He can handle it a little bit better.
And on the flip side of maybe I say they have unfair pressure, unfair expectations placed on them. At that age, they may be too young to even realize it. Because at least I do, when you watch baseball games, or when I watch baseball games, and you see a young prospect called up, 19, 20, 21 years old, a starting pitcher going against the Yankees in Yankee Stadium, you hear the phrase, oh, they're too young to even realize what they're doing right now. They're too young to kind of take in the moment and realize, wow, I'm in Yankee Stadium right now. So maybe these eighth graders, these ninth graders that receive these scholarship offers, they don't even like realize the impact that a scholarship from Alabama, from Tennessee, USC kind of means. So maybe they're so young that the pressure isn't applied to them because they can't soak in the pressure.
I don't even think that the pressure really hits that young man until he gets to college.
Yeah, until you have to perform.
Because, it's not real until then.
Well, because he's going to be the best player at his school because he's from Rhode Island, or, you know, in this Ty Simpson case, he's right there in Martin, Tennessee.
Yeah, he'll be the best wherever he
goes. He's going to be the best. So there's not going to be that ton of pressure. Westview, it's not going to be that ton of pressure on him. It shouldn't be. The pressure is going to be once he gets to college and he's the kid who was recruited when he was eighth grade. So people are going to look at him, and he better be the next Jake Fromm.
Well,
he better be the next Tua Tagovailoa, the kid who wins a starting job as a true freshman and leads his team to a championship because he was the next LeBron. He was, you know, Jimmy Clausen coming out of high school. That's when the pressure is going to be really applied.
If you look at the David Sills situation that we've been talking about, just think about it. Almost became a meme this past college football season. Anytime you watch West Virginia play, that got brought up. Oh, David Sills is the guy that committed to USC when he was in eighth grade, and everyone constantly talked about it. And if this kid comes to Tennessee, I think ultimately, sort of like how Josh Dobbs, it was every single time he ever got brought up, it was, can you believe he's an engineering major and he did an internship at Boeing, and you know, it had to be brought up every single time. I think Ty Simpson, almost wherever he goes, so he'll kind of be that, oh, he got offered in eighth grade.
John Harbaugh offered him in eighth grade.
Exactly. And I think that'll follow you. Well, and that pressure really sets in, or doesn't really set in, until you're in college.
Remember those YouTube videos of the Little League running back, number 5, is a little white kid, just running all through defenses, like Ethan Paul or something like that. Or his name, Paul was one of his names. Mm. What is he doing nowadays? Everybody's like, oh, this kid's going to be Reggie Bush when he gets to high school. And now he's not doing anything. I saw an update. He's playing like Arena Football League somewhere, which is nothing wrong with. Hey. You're making money playing football, but it's not D1 football like many people said. Oh, this 6, 7, 8-year-old's going to be phenomenal when he grows up. And he didn't grow. He was so short when he got to high school, when he got to college, that he couldn't be an effective D1 football player. That's kind of – I'm not against offering middle schoolers. I'm just not a huge fan of it because I still think there's so much progression that they have to go through in their life at that age that it's kind of hard to tell maybe where they'll be 4 to 5 years from now.
Hey, Tennessee got Jonathan Crompton because Tennessee was on him early, earlier than anyone else.
But that's also why Jeremy Pruitt gets paid millions of dollars a year, and I don't.
Yeah, Tennessee gets Jonathan Crompton. And, I mean, you can look back and go, oh, well, you know, Jonathan Crompton wasn't great. That's not the point. The point is Jonathan Crompton was one of the best quarterbacks in the country coming out of high school, and he committed to Tennessee when he was like a sophomore, junior in high school because Randy Sanders and Coach Fulmer was on him when he was a freshman. And so if you want to get really good players, it's about building those relationships. And if you see a guy that can help your football program, you offer them, and then you maintain that relationship. And sometimes it takes offering them as a ninth grader, and rarely as an eighth grader. So I don't think it's a right or wrong deal, or if you like it or dislike it. It's just crazy when you think about it. You know, you have a kid that's in middle school, and he has a college scholarship in hand. It's weird to think about. Hour 3, around the corner, 865-255-03, 850 AM, 100.9 FM, Rocky Top Sports. Stay with us. Be right back.